Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is my co-host, host extraordinaire, Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, did you like that?
I did. I was like an upgrade there.
Well, you didn't like co-host in the past because you saw co-host as like second.
Well, I don't mind being the assistant to the regional manager, if that's what you mean.
I don't think
you said it that way. I think you said, I'll come up with it. Right now, my mind isn't there. I didn't think you were going to say that. It is so good to be back on the podcast.
I know we've been away.
Yeah. It's beginning to look a lot like the new year.
It is. We have the new year. There's no snow on the ground.
Yeah. My cross-country skis are weeping in the closet. Hopefully that can change.
I know I've said before, I love the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the things I love about the winter, I don't need snow for. Snow is like, it's just a thing. But I do feel badly when I'm driving around and I see those snowmobile trailers and I just think,
yeah, that's a bummer.
That is a bummer. I mean, now they, in fairness, they're, you drive an hour or two north and you're going to find all the snow you need. But if you're just like if you're a snowmobiler that's like, I'm gone all day on Saturday or whatever, then you're fine. You can go up and find snow. But if you want to just tool around locally, but I don't know if that's a thing. If you live on a farm,
There are trails. I mean, I'm not an expert either. But you can go on the ice, I guess. That's probably pretty.
I saw people out on the bay and I'm thinking,
oh, they've been on the bay for weeks,
but it's 40 degrees. It was like 40 degrees and it made me nervous.
Yeah. Well, the great thing is they probably measured and they're very careful. I have to say, and I bet a lot of us are feeling this, it's been super nice having the sun out because I feel like there was a period there where we didn't have much sun. And this time of year, we already have a lot of darkness just because it's not up very much, but yeah, so it's nice. But yeah, hopefully we'll have some snow and we can do some of the fun snow things. Do you know how far north you have to go to get snow right now? I'm not even sure like how far north we have to.
I don't know.
I know like they've had a ton up in the, you know, northern UP, but I'm not sure how far you have to go.
I don't know. Maybe someone can call in and let us know.
I just filled my afternoon. I think I'm going to go.
Yeah,
someone could call in. That's true. Yeah. So if you're one of those listeners, Give us a ring and let us know.
Call us right now. We're live.
Yep.
We'll do it live.
We are live in this room.
All right. We are live on Sunday.
Yeah.
Although you weren't here live.
No, I wasn't. And everything seemed like everything went off like it normally does.
Well, I will say as the countdown reached zero and I was looking around and I said, who's doing announcements? And nobody was budging. And I was like, oh, guess it's me. So I jumped up there cold. I didn't have a bulletin. I didn't have anything.
So like normal?
No, normally. Normally, the moment, if I knew at some point I was going to be doing it, I might forget in the moment. But when I remember, I also remember what most of what I was supposed to, like, you know. But this time, I was thinking, I don't have any idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't admit
that.
I'm
sure it was all fine.
It's fine.
I mean, what could go wrong?
Well, it was great because it gave me an opportunity to point out how they cheered for JP 2 weeks ago, and I've never received anything like that.
So was there a spontaneous, not so spontaneous, like just roaring?
There was. And I told them it was too late. I was glad that JP got such a, but the thing was, and I told them this, and I said it, I don't know if people know I'm being serious, that... You know, we are obviously we tend to be very relational. I tend to be pretty laid back about things, but we are also a liturgical church in the sense that we take corporate worship very seriously. And so there really is like the call to worship is the signifier that we are entering in a time of worship. And so if my first time in front of people is when I come up to preach, that's in the heart of our time of worship. So I'm not going to make a joke about the applause that JP got or anything like that. And so it was in the announcements though, I told him like, hey, all bets are off, you know, in the announcements it's before the call to worship and you get non-worship Jay. Well, not, you know,
man, I didn't know that happened. I really missed out.
I still don't know who. Well, I guess we'll find out today at staff meeting. I'm sure that we'll have, you know, five different versions of what happened, what was communicated.
Yeah, I'm so staff excited for.
But that happens over Christmas because we didn't have a staff meeting.
Yes,
and so we. But Donna was doing communion. So yeah, when I looked at her and I said, actually, who's doing announcements? She said, oh, I'm doing communion. And I was like, oh, that's right. So, you know, we did it, Jeff.
So glad.
We survived without you.
I think I was thinking that when it was felt so odd because I just love being there, you know, and I'm there every week. I think it's since July that I wasn't there. So, it was odd, but I'm glad to be back this week and I'll be there this Sunday, Lord willing.
Great.
That's my plan.
All right. Well, that's all we have.
Yep.
Thanks for listening.
I hope you got your dishes done.
Yep.
You commuted to work.
All right. Now let's talk about the message. So we're just going to do a little 3-week interlude here before we start our next series going through a book of the Bible.
Which will be one of the books of the Bible.
Which will be one of the books of the Bible. And we are still wrestling through that. I think it was funny. You pointed out to somebody, it doesn't mean we haven't thought about it.
No.
Like we're kind of like 80%. I'm like 80% sure, mm-hmm. but then I still have these other thoughts.
I'm not sure enough where I can. One of my favorite parts about getting to study another book is that finding a new commentary.
I know.
And so we're not to the point where I've pulled the trigger on that, but we're narrowing in and it's going to be fun. I mean, Jay and I, we loved the last series. It was fun.
Yeah.
But we love most just to preach through a book of the Bible, and that's going to be fun. And for me, it's been so encouraging how many people have just made offhand comments about that either before or after worship. Hey, what are we doing next? I'm excited to dig in. So that's fun. We're excited about that. But yeah, now we're doing this like in between, and you focused on membership this last week. Yeah. And I have to say, I listened to it, even though I wasn't there. I downloaded the podcast and listened to it, and it was fantastic. Yeah, I really, really appreciated it. If I wasn't a member, I'd be considering it strongly after that message.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. No, it was really good.
Well, so somebody asked me yesterday, like, what made you talk about that? So organizationally, January is typically a time that we either, those first few weeks of January leading up to like our annual business meeting, typically we're either doing something to do with spiritual formation, like prayer or spiritual disciplines, or we are doing some kind of a state of the church address. And some years I've just done it in one message where I'm like, hey, here's what this next year, this is what we're focusing on. And then sometimes I've done it where it's where we take our identity statement, God's family on mission, and kind of do a 3-week thing. So like last year we did it on prayer. We did prayer through the lens of God's family on mission. Like, what does that look like us corporately? What does prayer look like? And this year when I was thinking about, okay, in each of those kind of categories of identity that God's, we belong to God. It's God apostrophe S, mm-hmm. but we are not just God's individuals. We are God's family, and we are not just God's family, but we are God's family on mission, the mission that he has given us. And normally we kind of go in order of that. But when I thought about this, given that we had a membership class next week, you know, we have talked about how with so many new people, it's really important that we figure out, how do we care for people well? How do we get people connected into real relationships? And then how do we as elders, pastors, how do we care and shepherd the flock that is among us? And I have felt for a long time that one of our big obstacles is really wanting to clarify membership and really trying to communicate well what this is, why it's important, and how it's helpful in the whole scheme of being the church. And so I've been looking for an opportunity, and so this was a good opportunity to do that. So that was my aim, was I wanted to talk about why it was important and kind of cast a vision for it and hopefully make people consider that. And because I think it's really a confusing topic. And so because everyone has different experiences, everyone has different understandings of what it is. For some people, it's just about having a vote, you know, when it comes to the business meeting. For some people, it feels more like when you hear member, you think of like a social club or whatever. It feels for some people, it really feels like organizational, and it just reminds them of just, and for some people, it's come with baggage because of past hurt. So anyway, that was the impetus to it. And, I don't know. I don't know how much it landed or how much it didn't. I did get some feedback. You mentioned some things.
Yeah. Well, and I got some feedback even this morning, and it was good conversation around it. Especially, I mean, there were two points. So this person this morning brought up, I don't think I'm going to say the quote right, Jay, but it was like the 11th commandment of not doing what other people have done poorly or something.
Yeah, and thou shalt not do what others have done poorly.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's a really good one to have in mind for anything in the church, I think, because like you said, and I think it's important to say that there are lots of us who have had really difficult, hurtful experiences in the church. And they can be so much worse because it's not the place you would expect it, you know, and it's really hard. But I think membership in particular, because of people's various experiences, and I think we live in even Christianity in our area, there's lots of different ways that gets like lived out, what membership means, different kinds of churches. You mentioned that some churches, if you're there in worship and you take communion a certain number of times, you're a member. And, but some places that means you have to give this much, and that's a public thing and everyone knows. There's just lots of baggage with it. And I like that you highlighted that. But so that's what this person brought up this morning, which was good to talk about. But, the thing that struck me, Jay, in it, as I was listening to it, is, the point you made about, like, when we think biblically about membership and the way we're practicing it, how do we get there? And one of the points you made was that it's similar. It's like similar to the way the deacons came about. And they came about not in Jesus's life, but after Jesus, when there a need arose where there was a deficiency in the ministry of the church. Let's just summarize it that way. And elders, and they came up with this thing called deacons. And I think it was from God, right? And we continue to do that. And it was really important for their ministry then, and it continues to be. The diaconate, the deacon ministry here, is a really vital thing to our church and the life of our church. Membership is like that. It is a response, the way we function, the way we practice it, it's a response to a need that has arisen in the church throughout history, and it is especially applicable today in a kind of non-committal atmosphere, environment, where people in general are hesitant to commit to things and feel often like they already have too many things on their plate. There's a number of reasons for it, and you listed that already in the sermon. But I just thought that was such an important point for us as we just try to think biblically about this, because you can't find a verse that says do it exactly how we're doing it. It's not spelled out in that detail. And so I think it's helpful for us who take the Bible seriously to be able to think about how do we get here biblically. So I appreciated that point.
You know, what's interesting about that point is, in hindsight, I wish I would have like structured the sermon more around that idea. You just, sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you don't know what point's going to hit and what's not. And you can think in your mind like, oh, this is the thing, this is the illustration that's going to hit and land, and it ends up being kind of a dud. And then there'd be something else that you just say kind of in passing, and then that ends up sticking out. But I think it's important, because what I wanted to do was, with when it comes to membership, I wanted to separate the theological, biblical idea of being a part of God's family from the practical playing out of local church membership, right? So the theological, biblical, I wanted to build the case of that's not negotiable, right? Like that we are, if you are in Christ, you are a part of Christ, you're a member of Christ's body, which means you are a member of one another. And, you know, I'd mentioned to you, the thing that kept me up that night, I mentioned to you that I kind of like, I was like, oh, I don't love how I said that, was in that context, I said there's, I actually quoted J.C. Ryle, but I didn't say it was, I just like said it, and I was, because it was out of order where I had it in my notes earlier, and then I just didn't say it, and then later I said it, and then, you know, I don't always say it the way that I had originally thought I would say it, but J.C. Ryle said there is no salvation apart from the church. And so I said that line, and I could feel that people were like, oh, you know, what do you mean by that? And I didn't really clarify that well. I feel like the whole sermon was really a clarification of it, and I think that's why you didn't even notice it when you listened to it. You were like, I didn't even notice that. So what I meant by that was not that salvation comes through the church. And that's how it's been perverted or manipulated. So to say you can't be saved unless you are in the walls of an organizational church or unless you are a part of a, you know, a particular denomination, or that's not what J.C. Ryle is talking about. It's saying that if you are saved, you are a member of one another, which is the church. So we're not talking about a particular denomination. We're not talking about Faith Church. We're not talking about it. It's not saying you can't be saved if you're not at Faith Church, or you can't be saved unless you are Baptist or Lutheran or Catholic. It's saying that by definition, when you are saved, you are bonded to Christ and to one another, to the universal church, big C church. And so there are no, one way of thinking about it is we have the imagery of adoption in Scripture, that God adopts us. We are adopted sons and daughters. No one is adopted as an only child. Nobody's by themselves in it. So whether you acknowledge or not, you know, imagine like a kid, imagine if one of my kids just said, yeah, I don't have any siblings. Like, yes, you do. Whether you acknowledge it or not, you're part of this family, which means these are your brothers and sisters. Like, they just by definition. So that's what I meant. And it's really going against that culture of feeling like, well, I've been burned by the church, or I don't like organized, you know, organized religion is one way that that gets come up, you know, comes up a lot. I just have my own personal faith and I do my own thing. And I just wanted people to realize, like, biblically, you can't go there like that. So I wanted to start with, this is what's commanded. What's commanded is that you are committed to the body of Christ and to one another. And then we're going to talk about more of the practical stuff. So I'm curious, like, I want to go back to the theological stuff. What would you, as you were listening to any of that, and as you think about the theological, biblical, you know, because you point out the deacons, and I want to talk about that too, but what's the non-negotiables of this in your mind, or why, where do you see that not happening, or why do people struggle with that? Why is that something that, you know, pushes against us?
Well, I think so much of it comes down to what are our expectations or assumptions. Maybe assumptions is a better way of saying it. Assumptions about what the church is and what being part of and belonging to church is. So I do think that culturally we struggle with, like, this, you know, lone ranger sort of follow Jesus, I'm his disciple, but I do that on my own, and the people around me, that whether or not I go worship with them on a Sunday or not, they're not even really part of that because they're not doing that with me. Like, we could be on some sort of mission in town, even, right, where we're serving in an area, but we see ourselves as an individual doing that and not as part of a family of God, or really literally Christ's body doing that. And so I think that is just a struggle. And one way I've thought of it too, and I've said it, is that discipleship always happens in community, and you just cannot find it in isolation when you read the Bible and the story of what happened in Jesus's life. And then in the book of Acts, in the epistles, you cannot find that where it's just this one person that is doing this all on their own. Unless they're in prison, or even in those situations, there's company, there's people supporting them and part of the family. So I think we have a tendency, we just do, to feel like we can do it on our own because of the assumption of what it even means to be part of the church. And you mentioned, like, the, if you don't want to be treated like a store, like a Walmart, don't pretend that you are, don't offer goods and services that, and I do think that's all part of it. That's maybe, been fed by that problem. And it's there's a feedback loop with that. Like, you feel like, well, the services they offer don't meet the need I have this need. And so I do that on my own. And so whether or not I take part in the services that they offer, it doesn't really matter. And I get it. If that's the assumption and that's the experience of church, it does feel like it doesn't matter, but really, and I think this is like a Bonhoeffer idea. I don't know if it's not a quote of him, but we do not make Christian community happen. We don't make the brother and sisterhood happen. It's a reality already. And you said that, like, it's like our kids, our siblings, that's a reality. They don't make that happen. And it's the same. We're part of his body. If we belong to him, we don't make it happen, but we get to live in it. And so to choose not to live in it, I think, is just to live without some of the joy that you'd get from it. And to, I think that there's a level of disobedience as well, because his expectation is clearly that we will live in it. We just, like, even we spent a lot of time on the Sermon on the Mount the last couple of years. Try to read that without thinking about how that applies to the people that you're doing life with in Jesus. It doesn't even make sense. It's written with the assumption that you're doing this with other people.
Yeah, I think what happens then is, you mentioned that the quote from Sam Storms of "Thou shalt not do what others have done poorly," is we then use bad examples of the church to then justify throwing the baby out with the bathwater and justify disobeying God in that. Like, I was hoping to drive home that whatever it looks like, being an active part of the body of Christ is what's non-negotiable. Like, you are disobeying scripture. You are disobeying God. It's not even a question. That's not fuzzy. Now, how that plays out practically is different. And where I would point out, part of this is what'll happen a lot of times is people will say, well, I don't want to join a church because the Bible doesn't command me to, like, do formal membership or whatever. But the issue then at play is, but how is your church functioning? And what I want to point out is, like, I don't think it's unbiblical for a church to say we don't have formal membership. There's some people who say that. I know there's some people who say, like, well, it's just, no, you have to have formal membership. And we didn't in our house churches. When we started house churches in Colorado, we never did have formal membership because nobody was in our church that wasn't committed. We just weren't. You didn't find us online. You didn't find us, it was a different culture. And as I pointed out, churches in the underground, like underground China, or anything like that, they don't have formal membership, I'm sure. They do have covenants though, and they live that out. So the living out of it is the non-negotiable thing. Now the question becomes, like, okay, well, practically speaking, what's being asked of you to help in that? I think about, if you're on a team, like a basketball team, and the coach said, hey, we're going to practice at 6:30 in the morning. And some of the players were like, you don't have to practice at 6:30 in the morning to be good. And you'd be like, well, that's true. You don't. What you do have to do is practice together. And if the coach is saying, we're going to do that at 6:30 in the morning, then that becomes like a very important thing. Like, you're not going to get very far by making the argument that, like, well, who says you have to practice at 6:30 in the morning? Nobody. But that's when we're practicing. Mm-hmm. Similarly, like, we worship at 9:30. If somebody said to me, well, the Bible doesn't command us to worship at 7 or 9:30 on Sunday morning. Yeah, you're right. But logistically, how crazy would it be if we're just like, hey, we're going to worship on the Lord's Day, but just, whenever, because the Bible doesn't command us what time we're supposed to meet. So we're not going to put that on you. Like, well, no, of course we don't do that. We'd say we're meeting at 9:30 because what's important is that we gather together corporately. And when you're going to do that, logistical things come into play. Organizational things come into play. We say, hey, we're meeting here. If anybody said, like, well, I've had people in the past say, well, there's nothing that says you have to worship God in a church building. Correct. Mm-hmm. But that's where we worship, right? Like, if you have family dinner, there's nothing to say that family dinners have to be on Sunday evening. But if mom says family dinner's on Sunday evening at the kitchen table, if the important thing is that you're sharing in the meal together. So if you're going to do that, by definition, you have to go where they are. You looked like you were.
Well, yeah. I agree. And the only way that it would make sense that we wouldn't have, like, you wouldn't need to set a time if you were not part of a body of people doing that together, any of those things. So eating by yourself, worshiping by yourself, praying by yourself, it's not super important that you have a set time. You just do it when you feel like doing it. And I think that's the difference. That's why, because we're doing this together, we have to, there's some organizational pieces to it. Like, when do we do it? And membership is part of that. Membership is part of how we commit to each other and to the Lord on the mission he's called us to. I mean, I think that's a big part of membership as well, is like alignment. Like, yeah, we are together in what he has called us. We don't think that what he has called Faith Church Peshtigo to do is the same thing he's called, you know, a church in across town to do. We don't believe it's the same. Like, in general, yes, but specifically the way that works out is differently. And membership is a way that we say, I'm in on that as well. I'm in on the particular ways that he's called this unique group of people to serve him. Yeah. So it affects the way we function missionally.
It does. And that's where I brought up the leadership thing. So I'll give you an example. And I mentioned that with you, you brought up the deacons, and we said we'd get back to that.
Yeah.
But the deacons, that's a really great example of the issue wasn't, oh, well, we're starting a church, so we have to have deacons because Jesus established deacons. Jesus didn't establish deacons. It was a response. What they knew, what Jesus had established, was caring for the poor and caring for those among you and making sure that people have enough food to eat and all that. He established that. And so the early church says, well, we have to do that. We need help doing that. It's not happening. So we're going to institute this help, this organizational help, to make sure that we're doing, you know, to help us do what we're called to do. It doesn't then become a command, you know, like, and it has sometimes in the church, it will be like the church will say, sometimes churches will be like, well, you have to have elders and you have to have deacons and you have to have, well, what you have to have is the church functioning like the church. These are offices like elder and deacon that are given to help in that. And so you could be in a church that doesn't have deacons. The question isn't, do you have deacons or not? The question is, are the poor among you being cared for? Are the practical needs of the church being met? Are they being met well? Or are a lot of them falling through the cracks? You know, if you have a building, is the building like being maintained well? Are you being good stewards over the building? Or is everything falling into disrepair? Well, we have deacons who oversee a lot of those different things, benevolence requests and all, because we need help to do that. And so membership falls into that same idea of, okay, we need to function as the body of Christ and as the church and do the things like be, you know, the living out the kingdom, like we see in the Sermon on the Mount. And this is the way the leaders of the church have said, this is really helpful. Because by having membership and by everybody who is saying, I'm in, it helps us make sure that none of those people fall through the cracks. Because instead of looking at a thousands long list of just, and then whoever happens to pop into our heads or whoever happens to be there on a Sunday, we can say, no, these are the people who have covenanted with us and have said, this is my church home and this is my family. And we've said, yes, this is, and we have committed to this. That allows us organizationally, it's a huge help. And the question then isn't like, well, why do I have to join? The Bible doesn't tell me I have to join. Well, no, but the Bible says that we're supposed to function as God's family, as God's people, and to trust the leaders who have said, hey, we think this is important. And that always makes me feel weird. Like, I always struggle when it comes to that because I know how much leadership has been abused in the church. And that's clearly not, like, our heart is not like, hey, do what we tell you to do. But it is sometimes to say, like, that's why I use the mechanic example. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's to say, listen, I know something about this. Like, mm-hmm. Help me help you. I want to care for you. You're telling me you want to be cared for. Then help me. This is an area where it's important. And then it becomes like the meeting at 9:30 or anything like that. If somebody says to me, well, the Bible doesn't command me to formally join a church, I would say that is true. No more than the Bible commands you to worship at 9:30. What we are saying is the way our church functions, this is super helpful to us to do it this way. And the example that I've given before about trusting in that is I was a part of a church one time that was doing a big building campaign. At that time, I was pretty anti-buildings. So I didn't want to have anything to do with that. I wasn't in favor of it. But when they asked the church, they said, we want you to give towards this. Lauren and I gave. And the reason we gave was not because I fully agreed with it. We had to come to a crossroads and we had to say, do I trust the leadership of this church or do I not? If I don't, then I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
I can go somewhere else. Or I can express, like have conversations with the leadership, you know, and process that out and ask those questions or whatever. At the end of the day, the question is, do you trust, if the leaders are saying this is what we need to do, this is going to help us be the church that God has called us to be, then you kind of say like, well, either I trust their discernment or I don't. And if I don't, then I need to think like, are they actually being unbiblical, or are we at a stalemate where like we just don't see ministry the same way? There's a lot of nuance in all of that. But I think the question then becomes like, again, like I said, using the mechanic, if nobody can tell, it makes me really uncomfortable talking about things like that because of how it's been abused. And I did have somebody say like the mechanic illustration was really helpful because it was, you start to realize like if you're a mechanic and you really care about your customer and you're like, listen, any mechanic who has been accused of like, well, you're just trying to make money off of me, when the mechanic's sitting there thinking, I want you to be safe. There are mechanics who take advantage of people and just get you to like just buy whatever they can sell you. Their whole goal is to upsell and to make this the most expensive trip possible. And then there are mechanics whose whole goal is to make sure you're safe on the road. And it's just one of those things where you're like, hey, I'm trying to like help me help you, like listen to what we say. So you can tell I'm uncomfortable. Maybe you can rescue me. And
well, I'm just thinking about your example there of the building campaign that you gave to, even though it wouldn't have been like, hey, this isn't the thing I'm most excited about for this church that you were part of. To me, kind of like what's underneath that, or maybe driving that vertically, is we are called to be faithful to our Lord Jesus, and He calls us to all these one another's, was what we read them as throughout the New Testament. And He calls us to love each other and to be part of His family. And the way that we do that is the way we're describing. So it's all a response. This is what it means to be faithful to Christ. And your response then to give in that moment was, I believe I'm called to be part of this family by Him, and I'm going to be faithful to Him and give, even when I have hesitations about it, because I believe He has put these men in leadership and I trust them. It's also, I think, you made this point, if it does make people uncomfortable, that's also the leaders you know that you go to if you have questions or concerns. It also identifies instead of the ones across town at a different church building. Like, membership also clarifies where we have responsibility. And I mean responsibility to participate, but also responsibility to bring to bear if we have concerns. Like, I think that's an act of faithfulness to Jesus as well, done in the right spirit, is I'm concerned about something and I believe we should be concerned about it. And you bring it to those leaders that you have said, I'm a member here. I'm part of this place. We're together in this. And I think that's where all those conversations have to start, is that we belong to each other in Christ. And so any disagreements or concerns, they're always brought up in light of that. They don't start from a place of separation. So I think in the season that we went through with the pandemic as well, underscored to me my experience. So it was my first experience in a pastor role. I had been in vocational ministry as a missionary, but it's very different functioning in a local church and seeing the challenge, I mean, unprecedented for our time, right, that the pandemic brought. But to me, it also just underscored why membership is so important. I mean, it just is vital that we know I'm in, and that leadership knows I'm in, and vice versa. Like, it's a family. And if we learn anything from that difficult period, was we need this. We don't function well if we don't have it, and not just the formality of it, but the reality that the formal part points to.
That's a, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wasn't thinking about that, but that, I mean, just imagine for a second, if your role was to be responsible for this church family, knowing that you're going to give an account to God one day, and all of a sudden the world shuts down and you don't know where anybody is or how they're doing or anything. And, you know, it's easy for people to say like, well, yeah, that's, you know, just give everybody a call. Okay. There's thousands of people on our roll. And so then the question is like, well, and we don't know, because we don't, you know, up to this point, you know, like we haven't tracked attendance or anything. So it's very organizationally, it's very hard to say, okay, well, who wants us even checking up on them, you know, and mm-hmm. how much time do you spend tracking somebody down? And it was a really challenging thing. It's much simpler when, you know, you can start with, okay, well, here are the members, like here are the people who have, like, kind of like this is our immediate family. And you think about, that's what you do. Even in the pandemic, we all had concentric circles of concern, right? Like, you know, your first concern is, you know, people like maybe your immediate family or people that live in your house. And then it might go out to like extended family, you know, brothers and sisters who don't live with you, or they're in a different town, you know, or, you know, whatever. Like we all have concentric circles of care. And you're right. Like that really underscored. That was actually when we started. That was a big moment of saying, we have to, we've got to clear this up. We've got to clean this up so that we can be better at caring proactively. You know, I mentioned it kind of in passing, but one of the practical reasons is because most churches get into a cycle where we're just putting out fires. Mm-hmm. We can be really good in crises. You know, someone goes to the hospital, there's a death, there's, you know, a marriage is struggling, people need counseling, that kind of stuff. Like, and we do that, and that is a huge part of ministry, and it's something that we want to be doing. But we also want to be doing proactive care. Sometimes, I'll be honest, like sometimes I feel like a doctor who's only seeing people after a tumor has really grown. And sometimes I wish that I had the role of nutritionist, more of like proactive preventative care, where we can say like, hey, let's build these things in, you know, these spiritual disciplines. Let's make confessing small sins normal, so that when there are big sins, like, so that you even nip those in the bud. Or let's be proactive about our health in marriage. Let's be proactive about our health in, you know, in walking with the Lord and in being discipled. And we want to be able to do that. And this has been a stumbling block. And so it is just kind of one of those things of saying, if you trust what we're doing and how we're like, where we're going as a church, then the ask is, hey, even if this doesn't feel like it's that big of a deal to you, would you trust us that it is, you know? And membership is one of those things. It clearly falls into that category. I had some people like comparing it to baptism, and I would just say, well, baptism is commanded, mm-hmm. right? So baptism is a conversation that we have because the Lord commands that, like he does with communion. It's not, those aren't negotiable. Membership and how we organize the church family is negotiable. There's a lot of different ways we could do it in other ways. We could use a different word. We could, you know, there's lots of different things we could do. But what we can't do is kind of just abdicate our responsibility or the commands that were given to function as a church family. And then if the leadership is saying, hey, this would be really helpful. And I also pointed out too, in that, of, I wanted to kind of set the tone and say, we don't actually ask a whole lot. Like our culture here is not, hey, can you give another hour? Can you give another hour? Like we try to keep things really simple, which then has the negative impact of not having a lot of things. So when someone asks, how do I get connected? Like, what's the next step? I've been coming to church and I'd like to get more connected. We tell them, fill out a communication card, come to a family lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, once a month we have a potluck lunch afterwards. And when somebody says, well, I don't really like potlucks, or you know, it's kind of a long morning and I don't really want to stick around for another hour or whatever, I say like, well, that's what we do. And then if like, it's kind of ironic. And here's the thing. When I start to go on this, you got to understand, I teach philosophy of ministry. I talk to pastors about this a lot. I don't blame people in our culture for being shaped by the culture. So I hope that's one thing I do want to make sure comes across is I'm not upset with anybody who like isn't a member or, you know, hasn't joined. If somebody realizes, oh man, that's been me.
That's not the spirit.
No, I don't blame you at all. Like the whole point of this, it's the same way that I don't blame somebody who doesn't understand generous giving. If they don't understand it, like maybe they've never been taught that. Maybe they like, now there are sinful reasons why a person may not connect with the church. I'm not saying that either, but either way, I'm not upset with anybody, and it's definitely not meant to be a guilt trip or anything. It's just meant to say, hey, let's understand this together, and then let's move forward together and be more faithful in what God is calling us, who He's calling us to be, and how we are gonna, you know, be that people together. And it is pretty common, and this is why I brought up the spiritual Walmart thing. It's really common for people to want all the things offered and to say, well, I want to go to a church that has all these different programs, but they want it to feel small when it comes to relationships. And I just saying like, those clash. And the reason why we are able to be highly relational is because we're so simple in what we offer. Like we don't give a buffet of options of getting connected. I realize that can be frustrating when you're thinking, well, I'd really rather get together on a Thursday evenings are just nicer for me. And I get that. I don't blame you. And I don't blame you for feeling that way because that's the way the church has functioned over the last really almost 100 years. I mean, definitely in the last 50 years. Last 50 years, the church has really functioned around this kind of consumeristic idea. And so that means most of the people in our church don't know the church outside of that era. And so it's one of those things where I get it, why that feels that way. But I also am saying, hey, trust me, this is better. It's better to be clear about like, just be there and trust me that this is a big ask, but it's the only ask that I'm making of the week. Like come to Sunday morning and hang out once a month afterwards and have lunch. Like that's what we're asking. And what's been really neat is seeing people who have done that, like that combined with like helping in children's ministry and how much community they've developed through just those simple things. Mm-hmm. Like you wouldn't think, as disconnected as somebody might feel, and you may think that, oh, what I need is 12 different classes and small groups and you know, all these different things. But the people who have said, you know what? Yeah, once a month, I'm going to go to this lunch. And I'm going to volunteer 3 times a year in children's ministry and serve some snacks. Like those people have really connected and developed some really sweet relationships.
Yeah. I think that's getting to experience being part of the member of the body, right? And taking part in what God is doing. And there's something really profound and I think joy bringing just being a part of that. And I love that you're saying it that way too, Jay, because I do think when it comes to following Jesus, we do often, we make the mistake of thinking it's something either more spiritual or more complicated than it is. I think probably similar with being involved in the church is that, you know, we overcomplicate that. And ministry, and we've said this a lot from the pulpit, but ministry is all about relationships. And anything that gets in the way of that is not going to be helpful. Anything that replaces that is not going to be helpful. We have to be, and relationships really, they function best by proximity. So we need to be in each other's path. And right now, the best way to do that is, like you said, the Sunday morning and those lunches. And then, Lord, and I think asking God, I want community in a way that I don't have it. Help me to get that and watch what He does in those moments. Watch how He will meet that need and respond. And as He gives you eyes to see those around you who prayed the same thing. And then you end up getting to together do that. And I think that's what we see happening. and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and you and I have the advantage of knowing a lot more stories than most people know. Yeah,
that's true.
And so sometimes it's borderline comical, just the way we function as human beings. I remember feeling this way back when I was in California and I was on staff, but I was like I was a very low level staff member, and so I wasn't involved in a lot of decision making or whatever. And I kind of had this view that everybody else was really connected, but I wasn't. And yet I also realized I didn't want to start a small group. Like the way that church functioned was, hey, the way you find community is start a small group. It wasn't even join a small group. It was start a small group. And I was like, I'm not starting a small group. Like, I don't have time to do that. I'm doing other ministry stuff. But I found, Lauren and I found ourselves getting increasingly lonely. Like, we just felt like we don't have a lot of these relationships. And so finally I felt like, okay, they asked us to do this. Let's just do it. And in that first small group was Robbie and Stacy Helene. So it was five of us, our first small group, and our friend Lori. And it was awesome. Like, it wasn't about the curriculum. It wasn't about the thing. Now, what I could have taken from that was small groups is the way to find community.
Mm-hmm.
What I've learned over the years is it's not small groups. What it is just buying into whatever it is. Like, think about if you go out to dinner as a family, the point is you're going as a family. It doesn't really matter where you eat.
No.
And if everybody just goes to the restaurant that they want, you defeated the purpose of what you were really trying to do in the first place. You'd have, like, imagine your family going out and all five of you are at different restaurants. Well, it's now no longer the thing that it was supposed to be. But if you said, man, I always have a really great time when I go to this restaurant. And so going to that restaurant is what's going to help. Now, that restaurant may be great, but only if all of you are there.
Exactly. Yeah, if that's spread out, great analogy. Yeah.
And so, like, I would still say if the goal is to be together, then that's the most important thing, not what you're doing when you're together or where it's happening. And so that's why trusting leadership is so important, because you're like, somebody at some point when you're going out to dinner with your family, somebody at some point says something like, hey, let's go to this restaurant. And somebody makes the decision and you say, well, that's where we're going. And now you have a choice to either say, like, okay, maybe it's not the best restaurant, or maybe it would have been more affordable to go to another place, or maybe it would have been quieter to go to another place. But at that point, it doesn't really matter. What matters is you're making a decision of, do I want to be with my family or do I not?
Yeah. And that drove your decision. And I think, again, just saying the same thing again, but that faithfulness to Christ in those decisions. So trying that out, like, I'm going to go to the lunch rather than asking the question primarily at the end of that, what did I think of it? Asking God, what did you think of that? Was I faithful to you in going to that? Yeah. Did I take the opportunities you gave me? What did I see you doing? Like, so that conversation, I think, is what he's meaning for us to do when we're together. Yeah. And I think that changes how we experience those things. And I get that that's like it can feel like a high bar. I think it's what will actually make some of those things that can be hard. It's too noisy or it's distracting or whatever. There's challenges with it, but it's what makes those things, how God uses those. So circumstances are not random. Mm. They're very intentional, and he is doing something with those. And so I think our dialogue, our vertical dialogue, needs to be ongoing, because then we find ourselves in the position to be an answer to the prayer the guy next to us prayed when he didn't know if he was going to come that day. And we just didn't realize it. And so I think being attentive to what he does, and that to me is an example of why we need to be in the family of God, because God does those things when we're together. You don't get them when you all go to your own restaurant. You might like the food more, but you miss out on what the whole point of going out together was.
Yeah, I mean, just the way you said that right there you may very well like the food more. And we've had people who've, like, come back, you know, to our church or whatever, and maybe there's another church where they like the preaching better, or they like the music better, or they like whatever. But the question is, at the end of the day, it's being a part of a church is about connecting with a family. And wherever your family is, like, we all put aside our personal preferences over things And in what you said about the lunch and it being noisy and everything is so true. And we acknowledge that. Like, we acknowledge that these aren't, there's, you got to understand what the purpose is of some of these things. And I've said before, we have lots of, like, we have several Bible studies. We have several, like, we have people getting together to do deeper work and to do, and we can connect people with that. Now, we do that all the time when someone says, hey, or when we're meeting with them, this is part of proactive shepherding, is we often encourage somebody. We tell somebody, hey, I think a good part of your spiritual formation would be to meet with these guys. Mm-hmm. We do that all the time. That's what shepherding looks like. And we're just not, and I am fully acknowledging that we all kind of have to relearn how to do that. We have to relearn how to function as the church. You think about the church 100 years ago or more, the church was like, especially when you think about the pioneers and everything like that, I mean, the church was their family and their community. They did not have time for big small groups ministries or anything like that. They worshiped together on Sunday. Usually they took all of Sunday and rested together and, you know, would share a meal together. But that was also where they got caught up with each other because they didn't have email. They didn't have cell phones. They often lived miles apart from each other. That's where they found out that, oh, Mr. Smith is sick, and so they need some help. And so they get the word out, and people go and make sure that they're helping them. And so there's really some beautiful, there are beautiful periods of time in the church's history. And I just feel like, man, we're primed to experience that right now. And so I want people to buy into that. And I think people want to. I just want to make sure it's clear that we're going to have to unlearn some things and relearn some things together. And you made the point earlier, and I think it's really important to ask questions. So I also don't want anybody to hear me say, like, well, whatever we say to do, just do it. And, like, you know, don't worry about the why. If you're curious, if you want to know, there's always intentionality, you know, and we've had lots of conversations with people where they'll say, like, hey, tell me why we do this. Why do we take communion the way that we do? Why do we have the family lunch? Like, why is that a big deal? Why do you want everybody to volunteer, you know, in children's ministry? Like, and we have answers mm-hmm. for that. And you could at the end of it say, well, that's not the way I would do it. I'd do it this other way. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you might be right. That's the thing where I think it's great where you say, you at the end of the day, when you go out with your family to go eat, you very well could get to the end of that meal and go, I like that other restaurant better. Mm-hmm. Okay. And next time when you choose, like if that's, that's who you're choosing, choose that other restaurant. That's fine. But remember the purpose of this. And so the purpose of the family lunch is that we are functioning together as a family. And so that means that kids are going to be noisy. Mm-hmm. It probably means you're not likely to have a conversation that is deep confession of sin, you know, and like a really quiet moment or whatever. But what it can do is be that part where you're kind of real with each other. I can't tell you how much young families, how loved they feel when their kid is being ridiculous and it doesn't bother you. Mm-hmm. And even if we have people that come to the family lunch who are hard of hearing and they don't hear a single thing.
It's amazing.
They
actually
literally can't hear
yep.
a thing that goes on in there, but they're there. Mm-hmm. And their ministry of presence is so powerful. And they might just have a little bit of a connection or a little bit like, but, and that just, that makes my heart swell whenever I see that because I'm like, okay, you're buying into, this isn't about like even what you're getting out of this or anything. You are here because you know it's important for you to be here. And some really incredible things have come out of that.
It is. I mean, it's such an amazing example of faithfulness to Christ and setting aside, really, I mean, setting aside probably our own preferences for that moment. Because I'm sure that the person would prefer to be in an environment where they could hear, right? I mean, right. Who wouldn't? So it's
and they
it's,
wouldn't
to
be
me,
wrong for that.
No, there's nothing sinful about
like
that.
I wouldn't say like, well, that's ridiculous that you want to hear. Like, no, like I totally get
that. We agree
that.
With that.
And we want to figure out then how, so if, as I have that conversation with that person, I would talk about, okay, what does it look like to get you into some environments where that is being fulfilled? Because everyone's spiritual formation does look different.
It does.
In different seasons of life, Which, by the way, like one last practical thing I want to throw out there, because I always think about disclaimers. And that's why I did address that. I tried to address that of like, hey, if you're not a Christian, this isn't like, we're not telling you to join the church. We're glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're here seeking and whatever. And that might take you years. Okay. Like you're not doing anything wrong by being here and not being a member of the church. Also, if you're new and you're trying to figure out, is this a family I want to be a part of? That takes some time. You're not going to learn that in even like, you could stay after church for an hour and talk to people. That's still not going to fully tell you, is this a family I want to, you know, get invested in? That might take time. And then, like I said, that there are people who've been wounded and that healing process is real. I have learned over the years, when somebody doesn't trust leadership, I don't take it personally. There's a lot of reasons why people don't trust pastors, and it makes me sad. Like my first emotion is I just grieve over the reality that mm-hmm. pastors have been untrustworthy. So that stinks, and I get it. And so some people, it just takes time to kind of heal from that. And so all of that, I want to give those disclaimers, but I also want to give the disclaimer as we're talking about, especially the importance of, you know, I mentioned Sunday morning and coming to lunch afterwards. And my mind went to, what about the person who's listening to this message on Monday because they have to work on Sundays?
Yep.
And they don't have a choice. If they want to have a job, they have to work on Sundays. I don't want that person to hear that and say, well, then I guess I can't be a part of it because I can't ever, or I can rarely go to when we all get together.
That's a reality.
It is a reality. And to that, I want to say, whatever you do, like figure out, like when you aren't able to be at those things, then you have to like figure out what does it look like to be more proactive in the outside times. You know, I'll give you an example. Another example is as my kids have gotten older, I have to be more intentional about when I'm going to get time with them. When they were 2 or 3, they were just always around me. So I didn't need to come up with opportunities. Now I got a 18-year-old that I have to make plans with. Like, hey, do you want to play pickleball on Saturday? Do you want to, like, I have to be intentional because I don't have those natural rhythms. So when you don't have those natural rhythms, either because you're physically unable to get here on Sunday morning because you work or because you're just like physical limitations, or you're a snowbird and you like you're in Arizona for, you know, or Florida for, I don't know why anybody go to Florida. Definitely Arizona would be the place to go if you're a snowbird. But if you're gone for 3 months, or you know, we have a lot of people who are retired and they go and visit grandkids a lot and they're gone a lot of Sundays. If that's you, like, then you just figure out, okay, well then it's going to take a little more intentionality, but it's possible. And we can help you figure that out of like, okay, you're not there, then be more intentional. Maybe it means, hey, I've got this group of guys that I'm going to be more intentional about reaching out to. I'm going to hop on a phone call. If I'm going to be gone for a couple months or whatever, like I'm going to make sure I'm touching base with some people. I'm going to make sure that I listen. That's part of the reason why we post the messages and everything, that you can like kind of stay in mm-hmm. in the loop, kind of a thing. But does that make sense? Like, I just want to give some practical, like there are exceptions to all of this. And it all comes back to what you said earlier, which is like, talk to us.
Yep.
You're never going to get like, well, if you really love Jesus, then you'd quit your job. Like
this, that's not who we are.
We're going to say, hey, let's problem solve this together. Because what we know is if you belong to Christ, then you belong to one another. And so God isn't going to put you in a situation where you can't obey him. He's not going to back you into a corner. So we just may take some creativity. So let's be creative. There are people who they may work on Sunday, but they don't work until noon, or where they don't work till 11:30. Or one of my favorites is we've had people before that have to leave for work mm-hmm. at 11 mm-hmm. or at 10:30. And so they come and then they leave in the middle of the sermon and they think that that would bother me. Do you know how, like, my first thought is, holy cow, like how important was it to you to connect with the church family that you did, even though you knew you weren't going to be able to stay till the end?
Yep.
You're not going to like get a head start on your grocery shopping or like, cause I want to beat the traffic. Like you're, you know, same way with people who have fallen asleep after they've worked a third shift and they show up, they go straight from work to come to worship and then they fall asleep. And I had a guy do that.
Is that what they told you?
Oh no, there's other reasons why people fall asleep. Believe me. But I've had a couple of people do that and then apologize. And I'm like, do you realize how beautiful it is that you're saying, we're going to come together. Now, if you do that, I might say, well, it might be helpful to listen to the message later, like so that you're able to talk to people about that or whatever, like, you know, do it or don't do it. But like, there might be some intentionality that if you have to leave right away because you have to get to your job, that you might be more intentional before the service. So that might be, it might look like if you have to leave early or leave like right at the end of the service to get to your job, it might mean, well, then come at 9.
Mm-hmm.
Come at 9, be really intentional about coming early so that you can connect with people before the service, knowing that you've got to go. If you're a family that struggles to get out the door and you show up 5-10 minutes late every Sunday, no judgment, because that would totally be my family if I didn't. Well, sometimes it is my family. Like it would totally be us. So there's no judgment on that, but maybe it means you're intentional about saying, hey, we're going to hang out afterwards a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all about figuring out, how do we get creative to function as God wants us to function and not make it about like these specific things or about just checking these boxes, but about the spirit of what God is wanting us to do. And so coming full circle, that's what membership is. Membership is just a thing. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just saying as leaders, like it's really helpful to us to make sure that we're caring well for people. And it's not like the gym membership. It's easy to get out of. Like, you know, all you have to do, like, we'll have conversations with you, but it's not like there's nothing legal that happens with it. You know, it's like when people say, well, you just want us to join because, you know, like what? I don't, yeah. It's not like we garnish wages. Like, no. I don't know. There's literally,
we don't.
Like, imagine if I went, like, well, you don't understand. And if I went to the police and said, but they're a member of our church, they'd be like, okay, that doesn't mean anything to us. You know, like, it's for us, it's so that we can care for each other.
Well, hey, we got another podcast in.
I'm glad that you just ended it like that.
Well, I was just feeling like it feels good to be back.
It does feel good to be, yeah. Back in the saddle.
Yeah.
It does feel that way. Doesn't it feel so weird when you're done with, like, the being through the Christmas season?
Yep.
All of a sudden it's like, oh.
I think with the holidays being the actual days were in the middle of the weeks too. I think it like amplified that for a lot of people. Just felt like a more extended, different than normal. So it feels good to be back doing this.
Well, I agree. Hopefully it's been helpful to you listening. That's our aim. As always, if you have questions about any of this, clarification about anything, please let us know. Talk to us. We love to have those conversations, and I had some really good ones after on Sunday, and it just reminded me of like, that's what we love doing. We love having these conversations, clarifying things that were said, being pushed back on, you know, ourselves of like our understanding of things. Like it's really beautiful. And so if you have those questions, or if you want to get more connected and you want to figure out how to do that, please reach out. Email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. Fill out a communication card on Sunday. Give us a call. Talk to us, whatever, and help us help you. And until next time, grace and peace.